Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 326. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how are you enjoying all the trade deadline excitement so far?
It's been much wilder than I anticipated. I really did not expect this much action, especially we still have 2 days to go at this point. So the fact that we have had this much movement, I think it's encouraging. And I think it's only going to lead to more movement. So I'm be really curious how the next couple of days go. As you're listening to this, there's probably been another trade go down because it's been quite a few, and it's been a really good seller's market to be in. It depends on how you look at the trades, but I'm pretty excited. I'm curious if Snell gets moved. I think that could be insane. You know, Crochet probably gets moved. Screwball's not going anywhere, but yeah, I think that it's realistic we see some more big deals go down.
Yeah, we've already had so many that we're doing an episode right now before the deadline. I think this is the first time we've ever had enough trades before the deadline to do an episode like right now. We have so many trades already that have happened in the last 3-4 days. AJ Puck kicked it off. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun trades already. Randy Arozarena is gone. Zach Eflin got traded within the division. Obviously, AJ Puck got some bunch of relievers switching teams here. Isak Paredes got dealt earlier today to the Cubs in a surprise landing spot there. So, yeah, it's been really exciting. We have a lot to talk about already, and so we'll probably do like part two of this next episode after the deadline because it's currently about 9 p.m. Eastern time. It's here on Sunday night on the East Coast. And as Chris said, it'll probably be another trade or two tonight. We're going to keep an eye on Jeff Passan and everybody on Twitter right now to see if something breaks while we're recording, which we'll try to get to. But if not, we'll get to it next time. Before we get into all the trade goodness here, the usual housekeeping, you can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our dynasty and prospect rankings, which we both updated very recently. So go check those out. And of course, check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. You got the fantasy football draft kit up there. Still plenty of fantasy baseball, basketball, everything you want over there at rotoballer.com. Use the code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package. So let's go right in order here, Chris. As I mentioned, the AJ Puck deal getting things kicked off. Diamondbacks got Puck from Miami in exchange for Andrew Pintar and Davison De Los Santos, who already went yard in his first game in the Miami Marlins organization. Obviously, De Los Santos is very intriguing. He's been flying up rankings this year, given the fact that he leads minor leagues with 29 home runs in 88 games, slashing .325, .378, .641. I think this is the biggest question with De Los Santos a lot of people have, Chris. Is he for real? The power absolutely is for real. I don't think anybody is doubting the power, but just what kind of hitter is he going to be long term, and does he make enough contact to fully utilize that power? So what are your thoughts on De Los Santos long term?
If he does make it work, then he's certainly the rare exception. I need to run the numbers and see like how often a player can swing as much as De Los Santos does, chase as much as De Los Santos does, and make as little contact as he does, and actually make this thing work. But that's all he's done. He's consistently just performed. And it's interesting. I struggle to think that, and I don't want to come off, I'm trying to figure out the best way to word this, but like the fact that they didn't protect him on the 40 man last year, I don't think it was a calculated risk, like that he would go to Cleveland and learn some new techniques. He had already made a swing tweak last year, but then to trade him, I don't know, Puck's been good, but if the orgs were really that high on him, I don't think they move him personally. I think that it was a good sell high by Arizona, and everybody's, what are the Diamondbacks doing? And I also think that fantasy people tend to overvalue players like De Los Santos, who put up massive box score numbers, and for good reason. A man's already hit, 29 home runs this year? It's ridiculous, and he's put up really good slash throughout the year. Hits the ball hard. The EVs are through the roof. He's got a max of 116 this year. His average EV is like 93 miles an hour. It's elite power, but the chase rate is absurd, 46%. Like, very rarely do we see that work. The contact rate is pretty bad. And then you look at it and say, well, he's only striking out 22% of the time. That's because he swings so much. Like, he's so hyper-aggressive that he's not getting too deep into counts where he's striking out. But his quality of contact is not often that great because there's a lot of ground balls. It's running a near 50% ground ball rate this year. So I think that, honestly, if you have De Los Santos, I'm not saying it can't work, but I think that this career path could really follow like a Franmil Reyes type. That's honestly like what I see Franmil Reyes. Gosh, I don't know. Like
Arcides Aquino.
Yeah. Jesus Aguilar. Like these kind of like bigger, like power first baseman, where it's like, okay, yeah, you can go on a stretch where you're just smoking it. And I think that's what he's going to do. I think you're going to have those flashes. And I think Franmil had a 30 home run season, if I'm not mistaken. And he had his moments. At the same time, like, when's the last time he's been relevant for a major league team? It's been, I think, probably since 2021 when he did hit 30 home runs. So I think that De Los Santos is going to have some good years. It may come with a really low batting average, may come with a low OBP, but he's going to put up some big power numbers. But I do have major questions on whether it works. Based on what I saw on social media, I'd probably sell him if you had him in a dynasty league, because all I saw was just people just screaming. They were the highest on him. This is like a otherworldly prospect. And I think you can get a lot for De Los Santos, and I'd at least explore, because now you have proximity on your side too. He's not blocked by Christian Walker in Arizona. He may be up in the next couple of weeks, and people like the fact that he's performed, and now there's opportunity for playing time.
Absolutely. I've always said, like, one of the three key times to sell a prospect is when their debut is imminent, when it's coming up and all that, the hype is on them, that they're going to debut soon. I think De Los Santos is a great sell high. And like I said, I love the power. Like, I've seen the power firsthand. We've seen them hit some absolute tanks out there in Arizona. If he was given full time, he played full 150 plus games, he's probably an easy 30 plus home run bat. But what average and OBP does it come with? Because as you mentioned, he's hyper aggressive, does not walk a lot. I think the walk rate's like 5%, 5.5%, something like that this year. So he's probably, a 220, 230 hitter with a 80-290 OBP or something along those lines. So I do think he'll get a shot, though, just because there's not a lot in his way now. In Arizona, Eugenio Suarez was getting hot at third base, as he does every second half of the season, it seems like. And obviously, Christian Walker is locked in there at first base. Now he's only got Jake Berger, And I'm not even sure who's been. Oh, Jonah Bride's been starting some games at third base as well. So I think he definitely gets some run there and probably hit a lot of home runs. But yeah, I think it'll be a detriment to your average. And then on AJ Puck, real quick, I don't think this is a real value change for him. He wasn't closing in Miami. He's not going to be closing in Arizona. Going setup to setup still has value in saves holds leagues or any league that values holds in some way. But I think it shows like Puck is definitely a reliever. The starting thing didn't work. It was very obvious. There was one that worked out very well, Crochet, and the other two, Puck and Hall, didn't work out well at all. But Puck's gotten back to being a very good reliever and hasn't given up a run since June. 8 scoreless appearances in July so far. Well, actually, 10, technically. 8 with Miami, 2 with Arizona. So 10 scoreless appearances, 11 innings so far for him in July. But yeah, I don't think there's a big value change here. But anything on Puck, Chris?
No, he's been one of the best relievers in baseball. Maybe he takes a closer role. Seawald's been pretty bad, but yep. You know, if saves hold league, like definitely want Puck on my team.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, saves holds. He's definitely been what, top 20, something like that for sure. Next up here, one of the maybe the biggest one so far, the Seattle Mariners acquiring Randy Arozarena from Tampa Bay for prospects Aiden Smith, Brody Hopkins, and a third prospect that I don't believe has been named yet. And first of all, like seeing Randy, you know, obviously he was a fan favorite there, had a lot of success there. And seeing him, like before he went out of town, just taking in a game for a few innings with his family, then saying goodbye to the fans by, you know, shaking their hands as he walked out of the ballpark with his family. That was pretty cool to see. But you know, Seattle needed a bat like this. Obviously, and with J-Rod on the IL right now, really needed the bat more than they already did. And Randy, obviously, look at the surface stats, not great so far this year, but really had turned things around the last 5-6 weeks or so and is on pace for another 2020 year. This would be his fourth straight 2020 year. And yeah, the average will finish lower, but he's been definitely trending in the right direction there. So I think this is a solid move for him. I don't think it'll change too much. I don't think the park factors are that much different going from Tampa Bay to Safeco or whatever it's called now. I don't even know what it's called anymore. The T-Mobile, what's the name of Seattle's parker now, Chris? Is T-Mobile now okay? I still think like Safeco and all the old names. They just change. Most of them change so often now. It's hard to keep up. But yeah, I like this move for Randy. And then with the prospects, I think they got two very intriguing prospects. I think on the surface, people are like, oh, Tampa Bay got fleeced. And maybe Seattle did win this deal now, obviously. But Aiden Smith, Brody Hopkins, both very intriguing prospects. Starting with Aiden Smith here, Chris, I think you were very high on in last year's FYPD. I think I remember you putting out a tweet. Did you call him this year's Roman Anthony? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah. And I think somebody had asked about that. And they're not the similar players, but it's not they're similar players. The standpoint of that they were not really talked about at draft time that had the skills to like really take off. Yeah, that was around last year's draft time. I was really digging in the profile. Big power speed and he's like a five-tool guy, really. The power hasn't fully developed yet, but he hits the ball. And his EVs are like average right now. Contact rates are probably about average, but really good speed. He's got a really good glove in center field, and the swing is really good. He's got just generates easy loft, and I think that it's going to allow him to get some good power. So I think that, again, it's this whole debacle of like you see in people like quoting the MLB pipeline prospect rankings, and they're like, oh man, like Seattle only gave up their number 23 and 28 prospect for Arozarena, but like pipeline doesn't update. And so you look at those guys, and I think Smith is certainly somebody that's soared up a ton. He's like a borderline top 100 prospect for me. And Brody Hopkins too is such a unique kind of profile where it's like it's a really tough arm slot release point with really good pitch characteristics. The question is, can he throw enough strikes? But if he does, there's mid-rotation upside here with Hopkins. I think the stuff is really intriguing. And the player to be named later is already known, but I'm guessing it's from this year's draft class because they can't technically be traded till after the season. Right. So I'm not sure how high it is. I have no idea. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I have no idea who it is, but I did see some indication from some reporters that it was a very good player. I have zero idea who it is, but like, I was thinking, like, you remember Trey Turner was the player to be named later after his draft year, which was interesting. He was a, what, 13th overall pick, something like that. Let's throw our dart and see where it goes.
Yeah, let's just have some fun with those. Yeah, let's see. Then we'll look back at this in a few months and see how close we were. See if either one was nailing it.
It's not going to be Gerangelo Sanja or Ryan Sloan.
Doubt that.
Confident in that. I just can't imagine them making that kind of move.
They went very pitcher heavy this draft.
Yeah, but it makes sense. Like, I could see Tampa liking was like a Christian Little from LSU. He was their 11th rounder, but Little has like a lot of talent and upside. I could see them going for that profile, even though it was a later pick. It's like they're still like at one point, like Christian Little was, you know, talked about as a potential like first round guy, especially out of high school. So that could be interesting way they could go. If they're going higher, like I said, I don't think it's Sloan or Sanja. And I'm not sure that I think that Little's every bit as good as every other pick they had, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't know. Grant Nipp would be interesting.
I was thinking him or Charlie Bellison. I don't think they'll go for Josh Caron catcher. I don't think they'll probably go pitcher and try to get someone they can mold. But
yeah. And the Rays like doing that. Like they like having the kind of projectable arm that has the stuff. Like that's exactly what Brody Hopkins is, where they really believe that they can make him something. So like a pitcher, and look at the Rays' tendencies and like player to be named later, Shane Baz, right? That's the kind of guy that they want, that maybe at the time is like, oh, they're not highly regarded. And Baz actually was pretty highly regarded, which was an interesting fact that he was a player to be named later. But yeah, looking at it, I think that there's a couple ways they could go and be curious to see who it ends up being. And maybe it's an international guy. I have no idea right now, but I do think it's somebody that was signed this year.
Yeah, no, that definitely seems accurate there. And yeah, Hopkins, like, I love his slider. That slider is absolutely filthy. I think just takes off, like wiffle ball characteristics, as I like to call them. The thing just absolutely bites really hard. And yes, Aiden Smith, excuse me, is obviously a very talented all around player. And like you said, like the power isn't quite there yet, but you know, he's starting to like show glimpses of it. He's got 26 doubles already and 9 home runs in 77 games for Modesto in the low A California League. And you know, over a 400 OBP right now, walk rate's well above 10%. He definitely got a lot of good building blocks there, a lot of exciting tools. And if that power continues to tick up like he has the potential to do, I think he's going to be maybe this time next year we're talking about him as like a top 25 prospect. I think that's the upside Aiden Smith has for sure. And going to from one good system to another, they're both good systems. Seattle always develops hitting prospects, especially pretty well, and pitching prospects. So I think Seattle needs to be in that discussion for one of the top player development orgs in baseball. I don't think they get talked about enough. Yeah, everyone talks about the Dodgers and Tampa Bay and Cleveland, etc. But Seattle does a really good job developing, and it shows. Look at that pitching staff they have. 4 of those 5 are homegrown. So definitely. Very fun deal there with Randy. That was one of the first deals. Next one, not really a huge trade. Doesn't have a lot of implications, but the Phillies getting Austin Hayes from Baltimore for Sir Anthony Dominguez and Christian Pache. Oh, how the mighty have fallen with Pache. But I think the biggest thing here is this potentially opens up more playing time for Heston Kjerstad. Hayes wasn't playing every single day, but since the deal happened, Hayes and was 3 games ago. So I think Kjerstad has started 2 of the last 3 games here. So hopefully this opens up a little more playing time for Kjerstad between left field, right field, and DH, kind of bouncing around both corners and DH right now. But I think now is a great time to buy Kjerstad. I think the inconsistent playing time has kept his perceived value in check a little bit. And I think as soon as he starts playing more and more, he's already been faring pretty well in limited time. He's slashing .277. 390, 446, 3 bombs, and 77 plate appearances so far. I think the value could really take off here. So I think right now is a good time to buy Kjerstad.
Yeah, and I'm curious, do they trade Cedric Mullins? Like,
I think they could.
It would be really curious like how this team looks in 3 days. Because I think that Mountcastle could be on the move. Mullins could be on the move. It could get really interesting in Baltimore. But yeah, I do think that it should open up everyday time for Heston Kjerstad at this point. Just can he consistently perform? And the same can be said for Kowser. Like, we've seen some inconsistencies. you just want to see them with consistent playing time. And I know Kowser's had the consistent playing time. It just hasn't really always performed. But Kerstad, last two games, two hits, at least showing some signs of life, at least. And hopefully the consistency does pay off for him. He's been striking out a decent bit, which is a little bit concerning. But at the end of the day, this is a big power bat. We've seen it in AAA. And I think there's plenty of upside now with a chance that he gets regular playing time.
All right, next one here. Seattle Mariners acquiring Yimi García from Toronto for Jonathan Clase. So Seattle just trading from their wealth of prospects, and they still got a pretty good system. So they were not surprised to see them make some moves here. I think García went from being a guy that was pitching seventh and eighth innings in Toronto, getting some saves here and there, to pretty similar situation in Toronto with Andrés Muñoz closing there right now. But definitely a needed acquisition for Seattle to get another really good arm in there in the late innings to go along with Munoz with all the injuries they've had, especially with Matt Brash having Tommy John a couple of months ago. But Jonathan Clase, a very polarizing prospect, obviously one that's really exciting and can go on some heaters, but another one where the floor is lower here due to some of the contact concerns that he has. And he's always had a little bit of a higher strikeout rate. Let's see, this year in AAA, hitting 274, 373, 483, 10 home runs, 26 steals in 59 games, but also had 72 strikeouts in those 59 games and didn't fare so well in his cup of coffee with Seattle. Where are you at in Clase now? I know the value on him has been all over the place, and I feel like I'm bumping him up and down my rankings a month. He's always a hard one to evaluate, but the upside is there. But do you think he ever hits enough to be an everyday outfielder?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's an interesting profile. He doesn't hit the ball all that hard. The contact rates are inconsistent. They've been better this year. There has been improvements, which is notable. In AAA, it was 75% end zone, or 75% overall, 85% end zone, which is a pretty big improvement considering where he's been in the past. And you honestly, with a respectable chase rate too, you'll absolutely take that out of him. The question is, like, where's the impact, and can he get on base enough to really make an impact with the legs? And I think he can, but I'm just not overly high on the profile. I think that there is an opportunity for him to play in Toronto. Hopefully he gets a shot, but yeah, I don't love the profile. Never been the highest on it, but I'm curious how they utilize him and what he can do with the opportunity with the Toronto Blue Jays. But yeah, I like Clase. I'm not like overly high on him, but he's fine. I think he brings some intriguing things to the table for fantasy purposes, but he's got to hit and show he can make consistent contact at the highest level of baseball.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I wonder if he takes over next year as Kevin Kiermaier announcing he's going to retire after this year. So maybe that was a kind of their plan. Like, all right, Clase will kind of take over that spot next year. We'll see. But yeah, he's fun, but definitely flawed. So I could see him. He probably ends up as not an exact comp because the power profile is differently for these two. But like, got Jose Siri, Leody Taveras, like in that bucket where he'll have a week or two where he's just like, oh my word, he's got like four home runs and eight steals over the last week and a half or something like that. And then everyone thinks, like, all right, he's breaking out, or you pick him up off the waiver wire, whatever it may be. And then he goes 2 for 640 with 26 strikeouts or something like that. So, yeah, I think he's going to be maddening to roster, inconsistent week to week, month to month, game to game, but definitely a fun player, that's for sure. Another AL East deal here, Baltimore getting Zach Eflin from Tampa Bay for Mac Horvath, Jackson Baumeister, and Matthew Etzel. Horvath is one that I've been very high on since last year's draft. And he performed very well last year. This year was a slower start, but picked it up a little bit over the last several weeks. Overall, still slashing 233, 328, 417, 19 doubles, 9 home runs, and 26 steals. That being with High A Aberdeen. And then Jackson Baumeister, second round pick by Baltimore in last summer's draft out of Florida State University. This year has been pretty solid, 18 starts, 306 ERA, and a 136 whip, 91 strikeouts, but also has 43 walks in 70 and two-thirds innings. What do you think of both Horvath and Baumeister here, Chris?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Horvath, I'm split on my opinion on him. Whereas you look at the profile and it's like, yeah, you certainly think that there's some power and speed. He doesn't hit the ball all that hard. And the contact has been inconsistent at times. He's certainly picked it up, as you've said. Saw him a couple of weeks ago when Aberdeen was down here in Asheville, and pretty intriguing profile. I think that it's one of those where it's, okay, you can see the upside if it all clicks, but he is a little bit older considering he's drafted last year, already 23. You want to see him get going a little bit more. Baumeister, maybe the big get here. He was most impressive to me. I saw several of those Aberdeen arms, and you know, he was really good. And I think the command has been the issue. The walk rate is a little bit higher than you'd like to see, but he's trending in the right direction for the most part. This month especially, it's been much better. He's only had 4 walks and 3 starts this month, which that's encouraging. And he's big strikeout stuff. I love the arsenal with him as well. I look at this arsenal and think that, yeah, I think there's a lot to like here with what he brings to the table. And I'm curious because it's a low 90s fastball. It's, you look in 92, but it's a heavy extension. It's like a 7-foot extension. So it really plays up. You like to see that. It's got a good movement profile. He'll hit you with a curve and a sweeper. The changeup is, it can be solid at times, but he's got to just be consistent strike thrower. But again, I think that potential was there for him to be the key piece of this deal when all said and done. And yeah, Matthew Etzel, I mean, it's kind of, he was flashy. People were like, oh, this guy's going to be, like when he started looking really good early in the year, people were like all in on him. This guy was the sleeper of last year's draft class. He was a 10th rounder out of Southern Miss. But he doesn't hit the ball hard at all. The quality of contact's not great. It's just a speedy profile. Or, okay, it's fine. It's a good third piece. But yeah, Horvath and Baumeister certainly kind of highlight this deal. And Eflin, really good get for the Orioles. I think they needed to make this move.
Yeah, so especially with Kyle Bradish out for the year and missing a good chunk of next year as well. They needed that third arm to put behind Burns and behind Rodriguez. And yeah, Eflin definitely fits that bill. It makes me mad that my Red Sox didn't go out and get Eflin, which we absolutely could have given this return. But yeah, I think this return, it's a lot of wild cards here. I think there's a wide range of outcomes for all three of these guys, especially with Horvath and Baumeister. I mean, Horvath could be a really fun fantasy player if he's able to make enough contact, and that's still the X factor with him. You mentioned solid power, even though the metrics aren't like glowing this year. Good athlete. That's been the trend here for Tampa Bay. All these guys they've been getting have been just good athletes. Eden Smith, Matt Horvath, etc. So I want to see maybe a change of scenery. He was already in Baltimore. Going to Tampa Bay is still a pretty good org, but it wasn't like he was in a bad org, obviously, with Baltimore. But still very high on Matt Horvath. But yeah, I'm in agreement with you that he needs to start like showing something. I mean, he's shown it in glimpses, but he needs to really start showing it more consistently because he's 23, just turned 23 a few days ago. Oh, hey, we have the same birthday. That's pretty cool. Happy birthday, Matt Horvath. That's a week late. But yeah, he's 23 and high A. So yeah, you want to see him start to assert his dominance over the younger competition. And then maybe he gets a cup of coffee in the Eastern League here near the end of the season. We'll see. But yeah, and Baumeister, yeah, I think starters arsenal, but relievers command and control right now. So we'll see if that comes together for him. Obviously, Tampa Bay has done more with less. So we'll see. Both of these guys are definitely very intriguing for sure. Next deal here, another smaller deal. The Cubs getting Nate Pearson from Toronto in exchange for Yohendrick Pinango. Obviously, Chris, it didn't work out as a starter for Pearson. Just clearly does not have the durability to be a starter, but could be. And the numbers this year haven't been great. He's at a 5.63 ERA in 41 appearances. He's still hitting triple digits, like that fastball is still there, averaging 97.6. He's been hitting 101 at times, so but it's been getting hit around though. 342 batting average against, 532 slug. Slider still really good, over a 40% whiff rate. Curveball, 32% whiff rate there, and he'll mix in the very occasional sinker. But really, the fastball slider curveball combination with fastball and slider totaling 86% of his usage rates. I don't know. Do you still have faith that maybe he can become a serviceable reliever for fantasy in like a saves hold league. I'm still holding out hope for that. Maybe the Cubs unlock something here that Toronto couldn't, but still has the characteristics are still there for him to be an impactful arm. We'll see if he can do that in Chicago.
Yeah, I think so. I think that he's shown enough flashes this year where I'm interested. The fastball's been good at times. Obviously, there's other times where it's inconsistent and gets hit around some, but he does show flashes with it where it's good velo and you mix in the slider. It's 40% whiff rate on that pitch. You like to see that. And then he'll hit you with a curveball at times too and gets plenty of whiffs there. Yeah, I think that there's some intrigue with Pearson. Does he become the closer? Probably not, but is there potential for him to still come back around? Yeah, I think so. And even though he's had a 5.63 ERA this year, he's had the moments where it's okay, like you can see it. And so hopefully he can put it all together. You know, it's crazy. He's 27 years old, which is not old, but I'm saying it feels like not long ago that he was the one of the top pitching prospects in the game.
Man, he's 27. That is just crazy. I was just watching him in Double A. Like, it feels like that was like last year. When was that? Like, now I got to go look. What year? You know, is that? Don't tell me that was pre-pandemic.
I think it was definitely pre-pandemic.
Oh, geez. Was it that freaking long ago that I was watching him? Several times up there. Me and Jeff Ponce will be up there as well, watching Nate, big old Nate Pearson. Yeah, it had to have been. He debuted in 2020. Yeah, Double A 2019. That was a great year, though. He had 2.59 ERA. That's why I had him as a top five pitching prospect, and I wasn't alone there. But, yep, has not worked out for Pearson so far, but still holding out hope that he can provide some value in, like, a saves hold league. All right, next deal here. Another big one. This might have been, if not the biggest one, the second biggest one behind the Rosarena deal. The Yankees getting Jazz Chisholm from the Miami Marlins in exchange for prospects Augustin Ramirez, Jared Serna, and Abraham Ramirez. Obviously, the big one here is Augustin Ramirez, a guy that's had a phenomenal year between Double-A and Triple-A. He had a Triple-A numbers haven't been stellar, but he was tearing up Double-A, 290, 372, 570 slash there, 16 home runs, 13 steals in 58 games. Triple-A still has four home runs and five steals in 29 games, only slashing 224, 328, 365, but definitely, I'm very high in the bat. I don't think this speed continues, at least not to this level. But maybe he's a guy that provides 5 to 8, at least something on base paths. A sneaky athlete for his size, and you wouldn't think he'd be stealing bags, but definitely has been doing so this year and last year, too. He had 12 last year and 114 games, but good power bats. I think he could be 25, 30 home runs with a solid average and a good OBP as well. I mean, he's shown a pretty solid approach. Walk rate's over 10%, K rate's below 20%. I have him as close to a top 25 overall prospect right now. And we'll see. Maybe this lets him catch. I'm wondering, with Austin Wells there, would Ramirez catch enough to retain eligibility? Probably has a better chance to do so now. We'll see how they think of him. Maybe he still is a first base DH guy long term, but definitely like the bat a lot. I don't like him going to Miami, but if it frees up more playing time and playing time sooner, I guess I'll take that. But what are your thoughts on Ramirez, Chris?
Yeah, he's legit. I think that what he's shown this year has been one of the best power bats in the minor leagues, and it's come with respectable contact too, which is pretty rare to find when you can hit the ball as hard as he does and still make enough contact to be relevant. It was a 77% contact rate in Double A, which was very encouraging. He's at 75 in Triple right now with an 84% in zone. It's going to play when you have a 108 mile an hour 90th percentile, which is at the top. Like, that's where Junior Caminero is and a lot of the best power hitters in baseball. He doesn't chase all that often. He doesn't expand the zone. Like, I love this profile, and I think it's one that he could be in the majors pretty soon. Wouldn't shock me at all to see him up and dominating. He could certainly put up some big power numbers. I look at this profile and think that it can work. Serna's interesting. He's tiny, but Serna, he might be the only, I think there's probably a couple of minor leaguers that have a 3-home run game. He's one of them. And that's surprising because he is very small, 5'7", but he hits the ball hard. He's gotten a 104 mile an hour 9th percentile EV, which is above MLB average. And when you're 5'7", you can get to that kind of juice. It's not questioning whether it's legit or not anymore. Is it just a fluke that he's at 13 home runs so far this year? I don't think so. And it's a sneaky kind of profile. Do I think he's like a stud, like No, I don't believe that, but I do think that Cerna's interesting. He makes a lot of contact, and he's got some sneaky juice in the bat, so it's a good second piece. And I saw Abrahan Ramirez last week when I was in Tampa. He's a very contact-oriented hitter where he's put up, obviously, great batting averages this year. He's had a lot of multi-hit games. Interestingly enough, so he left the game that I was at with heat exhaustion, and apparently it's been like a common thing for him. It was like 92 degrees, just hot, but not that hot. But apparently the Yankees guy sitting with me was telling me like this has happened like 4 or 5 times this year, which is weird. So I'm worried, like, is it something that he's actually going to deal with? And I hope not, because I think that his interesting profile, really good feel to hit. He's small. He has some room to fill out though, and could potentially add a little more juice, but good runner, heavy ground ball profile, but he's certainly somebody to watch. Is a third piece upside shot? Yeah, I think that's a pretty good get for Miami, especially with Ramirez headlining it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was an intriguing return. Obviously, Ramirez being the big get, but yeah, Cerna's intriguing too. I think he could turn into, you know, maybe a super utility guy. He's played all over the diamond. See, this year he's made, he's played second and short, but he's also played third outfield. He played a lot of games in Mexico this winter as well. He's played all over the diamond in his minor league career. Outside of, he hasn't played any first base or center field, but second, third, short in both corners over the last few years. And he's just played a lot lately. He had 122 games last year, played 61 in the Mexican Pacific Winter League. He hit pretty well, hit .310 there with 7 home runs. And then he's put 88 so far this year. So he's just played a ton. And yeah, I think he could be maybe a deep league guy down the road. You got to pick him off the waiver wire when he's starting, when somebody gets injured. But yeah, definitely an intriguing little profile here with Cerna. And yeah, with Augustin Ramirez, I think he is a top 25-ish caliber prospect, massive power bat. And yeah, I like him more than De Los Santos. I think that's going to be a good poll put out, see who people are higher on, just like general consensus on him versus De Los Santos. I feel like it'd probably be pretty close to 50-50, I want to say, but I like Ramirez more. I think he's a better pure hitter with pretty similar power projections. Give me Ramirez all day there. And then Jazz with the Yankees. I tweeted this out probably a week ago or so that, A, he's performing pretty well this year. Some of the metrics are down, but he's still on pace for about 20 home runs, about 30 steals, somewhere in that range. But most important thing is he's already at his career best for plate appearances. He had 241 last year, he had more in 2021. 2021, he had 507 plate appearances, but approaching it and more than the last 2 years, only 241 and 383 plate appearances the last 2 years. Still hitting right around 250. That's kind of a sweet spot for him. It's where he always has been. Power metrics have gone down a little bit, but at the same time, the K rate's gone down about 6%. He's walking more than he ever has. Career best walk and strikeout rates right now. And he's still hitting the ball. He's still got above average quality of contact, 10.7% barrel, 37.6% hard hit rate. But the thing is, he still hits a little too many ground balls, which limits him, 50% ground ball rate. But I just love the fact that he's getting into a better park, a better lineup. But he doesn't have a lot of runs and RBIs this year because that Miami lineup around him has been pretty terrible. So just getting him in that Yankees lineup, Soto, Judge, and everybody, it's going to be pretty fun. So I think this is a solid kind of uptick in value for Jazz.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that as long as he can handle like being in New York's, the interesting thing is like, how does he fit on that team? And if he can make it work, and I think that there's the potential. I know there's nothing negative against him. I think that Jazz is just like your do things differently kind of player, and the Yankees are like very regimented in what they like. So as long as he can conform to their standards, like I think the bat's going to play, and I think it's a excellent move for his fantasy value. If you have him, you've got to love that.
Yeah, this can't be bad. It's just hopefully he can stay healthy. That's been the big thing, but he's been healthy this year, which has been great. And again, he's still on that 20-30 pace.
Yeah.
In his first game today, started in center field and hit fifth right behind. Soto's hitting second, obviously. Judge third. And Austin Wells settled into that cleanup spot for them lately. So hitting fifth behind those three. And Wells has been hitting pretty well of late too. Verdugo hasn't really been in the leadoff spot, but yeah, solid spot for Jazz. I think you can see him driving a lot of runs. We get Soto getting on base, Judge getting on base, and he's got Gleyber Torres, Ben Rice, Volpe right behind him. So those have been guys have been up in town, but a much better lineup in front of him and behind him and all around him, really, than he had in Miami, and that's not even remotely close. Next deal here, the Red Sox, my Red Sox countered with getting Danny Jansen from the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm kidding, obviously. But no, that deal did happen. Gave up Cutter Coffey, Edison Polino, and a third prospect who I forgot to write down, apparently on the list here, but giving up Coffey and Polino, the two biggest prospects here. Jansen's been very up and down in his career, and he's only a career 222 hitter, but you'll probably see it split time between catcher and DH, probably playing more often than not, at least probably 80%+ of the time. So I think this is a solid move for him. Obviously, a good ballpark for right-handed hitters, two catcher formats or deeper leagues. I guess he's fine, but I don't know. Not a lot of like sexy fantasy talk here with these guys, but any thoughts here on Jansen or Cutter Coffey or Polino, Chris?
Not really. I think that it's a good backup move. They got rid of Reese McGuire, who obviously caused pretty big issue last week in Colorado, which was interesting. You don't have to go into detail on that one, but yeah, so I think that maybe this move is that exactly, like, you get out from under Reese and get someone in there, because I think Jansen can be serviceable. I think it's a good pairing with Connor Wong until Teal's ready. Jansen's contract's expiring this year, right? It's just a rental.
Yep. Yep, it's an issue.
Yeah, I don't think I'm being biased when I say this, because I've seen a lot of Coffey and Polino. It still feels like a little bit steep of a price, and I hope that doesn't come off as biased at all. Coffey and Polino are fine. I don't think they're going to be stars, and they gave up Gilberto Bautista, DSL right-handed pitcher. I don't know. It's interesting, but I'm wondering, like, why the move was needed. So that's my thing with it.
You and me both. It doesn't move the needle for this year. He's not going to be around unless they resign him, but he has contracts up after this year. Kind of a weird move. But if you want to hear details on Reese McGuire, you can listen to the special Tool Shed After Dark. That we, no, I'm just kidding. But everyone probably knows that story by now. Yeah. Or if you don't, for some reason, go look it up. It's pretty funny all around. But yeah, this is hopefully this one goes better than the last Toronto catcher we got, which was Reese McGuire. So getting all those Toronto, we'll get Alejandro Kirk in a couple of years.
This probably.
Keep funneling them here. He can back up Teal in 2-3 years. But I think that does signal that this is something I thought anyway, and I think you thought the same thing, that Kyle Teal's not going to be up this year. He'll be up next year. And I don't think any of the big three debut this year. I think they bring him up all early next year. But we shall see. But next deal here, Phillies getting some bullpen help with Carlos Estevez from the Los Angeles Angels in exchange for George Klassen and Spencer Aldegary, two intriguing pitching prospects. Klassen especially. You talk about wiffle ball stuff. Klassen definitely has that. Maybe he has one of the best breaking balls in all of the minor leagues. I was absolutely dominant down in low A, which to be expected. He was 22 years old, but had a 0.71 ERA and a 0.87 whip in 9 starts, 57 strikeouts to 12 walks. Not quite the same success after getting bumped up to high A. 5 starts, 4.22 ERA, 1.17 whip, 32 strikeouts to 9 walks. But really fun stuff here with George Klass and Chris. Going to the Angels, not the greatest spots. I have my reservations about that, but just in general, Klassen, definitely a very fun arm.
I think so. I think that there's plenty to like here. Klassen, it's a fastball that sits 96, 97. It's interesting shape. It's got a lot of arm side, not a super high IVB pitch, but he makes it work, and it's an interesting slider as well. Literally, it's 0-inch vertical, 0-inch horizontal at 90 miles an hour. So it's like a bullet slider, I guess you could call it, where it's just spins and sits, but it works. Like, those work for some people, and that's definitely a plus offering. And mix in a curve too. It's a little more sweepy with good depth in the mid-80s. I think that he lands that pitch, actually. The curveball is surprisingly one of his better strike pitches. I think that the fastball is interesting. I think that the command, does it stick? Stuck so far, but this was somebody that walked nearly a batter per inning in college. So that's obviously a little bit concerning, but it seems to me that he's overcome that. Actually had a scout in Tampa during a rain delay. We're sitting in the the booth, and Scout told me that George Klaassen is the best athlete in the Philly system, pitchers and hitters, which is interesting to hear. So that's pretty high praise for somebody, yeah, especially a pitcher. And you like a good athlete on the mounds, like that kind of profile. Aldegary's interesting. He's put up really good results this year, but I think at the end of the day, it's like kind of average stuff at best. Maybe it's slightly below average. The results so far have been good. Maybe the stuff ticks up. We'll see. But right now, it's just okay stuff across the board where he does have four pitches. It's a 93-mile-an-hour fastball. It's nothing really unique about the pitch. It's a slider. It's mixing a change, mixing a curveball. So I think he's fine. I think that Klaassen obviously is the big get here, which I think they end up doing pretty well to move a reliever. I know Estevez has been really good, but you know, to get Klaassen and take a shot on Aldegary too, I think that's something the Angels needed to do.
Yeah, I think it was a good move for the Angels. Obviously, another kind of lackluster year for them. That's like the thing you don't need when you're rebuilding or not contending, is these relievers become trade chips. And you know, Estevez has been, he's been up and down, but he's been solid this year. We'll see what kind of role he goes into there with the Phillies. Obviously, Matt Strom's been pitching well. Jeff Hoffman pitching, maybe he kind of factors into the saves mix a little bit there. Obviously, they have Kirkering, Alvarado, a lot of names there, but definitely another needed piece there with Estevez, another righty in that pen. It was really just like Kirkering and Hoffman there for the big name righties in that pen. But yeah, Klaassen, I think, is a really fun arm. It's really good stuff, but I have my reservations about the Angels' development in general, so don't love this kind of landing spot for him. We'll see. And I think I called him Spencer Aldegary. Samuel, my bad. I always combine like him and Spencer Arrighetti with Houston. I combine those two names all the time, and I did it again here. I'm pretty sure I said Spencer. But Aldegary, maybe back-end starter's profile. He's pitching pretty well this year between high A and just got the double A couple starts ago, but yeah, not like a ton of upside there, but we'll see with Klaassen. Definitely a big wild card. We'll see if the Angels can not mess him up, so to speak, but definitely a fun pitching prospect for sure. A couple more trades here that happened earlier today. The San Diego Padres acquired Jason Adam from the Tampa Bay Rays for Dylan Lesko, Homer Bush Jr., and a player to be named later. Lesko, out of it, a lot of these relievers aren't going to better situations. It's like value shift. So not a big change there for him. But Dylan Lesko, I think, is the real intriguing piece going back here to Tampa Bay. Obviously, was a first rounder last year's draft, but had the, 2 years ago, 2022, was a first rounder, a high school arm out of Georgia, and one of the more high upside prospects in that draft, and still has a good amount of upside. But coming back off a major injury, major surgery, it's been very inconsistent for him. He's got 52 walks this year in 69 and two-thirds innings, 6.46 ERA, 1.54 whip. Had been pitching better of late, but still that walk rate is still incredibly high. I mean, he's got a phenomenal changeup, good fastball, but just really needs to start throwing more strikes because the strike rate right now is terrible. He's got 10 wild pitches. He's hit 12 batters. A lot of issues there, but if Tampa Bay can help him right the ship in terms of strike throwing and commanding his arsenal, he's got a ton, like maybe not frontline upside, but maybe number two starter upside if everything clicks with Lesko. He's still only 20. He'll be 21 early September, still on the younger side here, so hopefully Tampa Bay can work their magic with him. Again, they've done a lot of good in the pitching department, so it's like my hope, fingers crossed, they can fix Dylan Lesko here, but I don't know. Do you have faith that they can do that, Chris?
I certainly believe in the arm talent. The arsenal's really good. He's probably one of the best high school pitchers that we've seen in a long time. And unfortunately, I don't think he's been the same since Tommy John. And yep. You know, certainly with the strike throwing, like that's been the issue. It's a good fastball. It's lower 90s right now. It's not back to where it was in high school, which is interesting. Right now, he just can't find the zone with it. Like he just cannot command the fastball at all. And so the results have been terrible with it. The changeup's always been his bread and butter. He does find the zone a lot more with that pitch and gets a lot of whiffs. It's a very big curveball in the mid-70s. It's a solid slider as well, but he just doesn't throw enough strikes. So we'll see if they can make this work. And I hope that as he continues to move out further away from his surgery, that it can work out. And I think that the upside still remains. The Arsenal is really intriguing. He's still young. He'll turn 21 at the end of the year. So yeah, still got plenty of time in his development. So I think at the end of the day, you just hope that he can stay healthy and that he can throw enough strikes.
Yeah, that's obviously the big thing with him. Still got plenty of talent, but a lot of risk right now. I have him ranked right around, I think I had him 200 on the dot, if I recall correctly, in my July top 500 update. I think the upside's there. He has been in my top 100 in the past. Obviously, he's been steadily falling here the last 12, 18 months or so, but I think definitely could get back to top 100. Probably not this year, but it's not going to happen overnight. Tampa Bay doesn't have that much magic, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if next year we're back to him talking about him as a top 100 guy. We'll see. Could go either way, obviously, but definitely one to keep an eye on. And just real quick, another great athlete acquired by Tampa Bay. As I mentioned, they've been getting a lot of good athletes in these deals, getting Homer Bush Jr., second-generation player. His father played in the major leagues back in the mid-2000s. Another phenomenal runner, double plus. I've seen some 80 grades thrown on his speed. The bat is still a question. No, he's performed okay this year, hitting 272, 362 OBP in 86 games. He's, 6'2", 205 frames. Yeah, solid frame, but doesn't really have a ton of power in the profile. But I don't know. They have a lot of speed. They already had a lot of speed, and they continue to add a lot of these big athlete, big speed guys. Now, do you have any faith that the bat with Homer Bush is going to make him be a fantasy viable player down the road?
I don't. I think it's a fourth outfield type profile that you hope can work with some speed. He is a legit runner. There's no question about that, that Homer Bush can be a speed source. And as far as contact, like, he makes enough contact, but I don't think there's enough impact with the bat. So I'm curious to see how this profile works out, but I'm not like super excited. But I think that right now you're looking at a fourth outfielder at best.
Wonder who would win in a foot race, him or Chandler Simpson?
I don't know. I haven't seen Bush run in person, but I've seen Simpson run in person. It's absurd. Yeah. And the clock time home to first was absolutely nuts. I don't know. I can't speak for Bush, but I can speak that Simpson's probably like the fastest player I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's probably Simpson. What does he have this year for steals? Like, he's already in the 60s, I want to say. Is he even higher than that?
I don't know.
Let's see. I'm going to look it up real quick. He is at – that is not the right person. Well, yeah, that's the right person. Never mind. 65. Yep, 65 steals in 76 games so far. Yep, pretty solid. But, just a lot of great athletes in the Tampa Bay system. Last deal here, another Tampa Bay. They've been very active so far and getting out in front of all these other teams and selling off pieces. Last deal that went down earlier today on Sunday, Cubs getting Isak Paredes from Tampa for Christopher Morel. Hunter, I forget. How did we figure this name out, Chris? Biggie, that's right. I want to say fancy, go Biggie. But yeah, Hunter Biggie and Ty Johnson as well. That's an interesting deal. Obviously, a lot of rumors surrounding both Paredes and Yandy Diaz. And Houston was been mentioned for both of them, which I thought would have been very intriguing, especially for Paredes, given his extreme pull profile and those Crawford boxes, which are like 40 feet away in left field. That would have been huge. But going to the Cubs, who the left field foul pole is 40 feet further away than Tampa Bay. And people were saying, the left center field is about the same and the winds with Chicago, but that wind usually blows in. And even if it was blowing out, 40 feet is a noticeable, it's not like it's 10, 15 feet. 40 feet is pretty large. And I take these X home runs with a grain of salt, but this year, X home runs at Tampa would have been 19, at Wrigley Field, 11. So take that and do with it what you will. Maybe it's a better lineup construction for him. I'll give him that. He's still only 25, but I think this is a slight downgrade for Paredes, just given that a lot of his home runs aren't to left center. Look at his home run spray chart. One, maybe two, I'd say, were in left center. And then the rest are down the left field line. So that's a 40 feet difference. Maybe a few of those aren't getting out. So, yeah, I think this is a slight downgrade for Paredes. But what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I think he's got enough juice to make it work. And he just has perfected the ability to lift and pull. And yeah, obviously it's a pretty sizable difference in park, which is, I think, pretty notable, but I'm not sure like how much it affects him. We'll see. The power's fringy is just, you look at it and say, okay, like this guy has perfected the art of lifting and pulling fly balls better than anybody. So I'm curious to see how this one shakes out. I think that he can certainly make it work, but does he? We'll see. He's consistently proved me wrong. I didn't think the success would continue this year, and it has. I'm not fully doubting him. I think he can continue to perform. To what level? He's pretty much been similar to what he was last year, minus a few home runs. He's not pacing the same home run, but he's making more contact. He's an elite contact hitter with a ton of balls in play. So a lot of healthy fly balls to the pool side. I don't know. I think that it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. I'm curious how his splits actually look home and away.
I looked this up earlier. Someone mentioned, I don't have it right in front of me, but the average was fairly close. He actually had more power at home. Average and OBPs were pretty close, but there was more slug and ISO on the at home than there was on the road, which I thought was actually going to be the reverse. But yeah, so I don't know. Paredes, I've always been lower on Paredes. I think people know that. I've been pretty vocal on that. It's just such a weird profile, and yeah, he has perfected the art. That's why I'm like wondering on this 40 extra feet. And he's been cooling off over the last month, 6 weeks or so, as he compared to where he was earlier in the year. But I think I've said this before a long time ago, but if you just looked at the profiles, look at especially the approach, the contact, and the quality of contact, and then look at anything else, you'd probably think, oh, this guy's hitting 280, 290 with like 10 home runs a year. But no, it's like the exact opposite. He's hit 250 or around there. He's a 233 career hitter with zone contacts. He's been 89.4, 89, 89.2, 89.6 zone with 95.3 his first year, but he's been right around 90% zone and in the 81 to 83, 84% range for overall. So like for him to be hitting that low of an average, it's just a weird profile all around. But yeah, Paredes I've never been super high on. I think he's more of a sell than a buy, and I'll pretty much always say that. We'll see how he fares in Chicago. And then Christopher Morel, another really intriguing profile. He's got 18 home runs, 7 steals this year, 26 and 6 last year, and basically the same amount of playing time. So he'll shoot past each of the last 2 years, plate appearance totals, but he's also the worst slash line of his career. OBP is pretty close the last couple of years, but only hitting 199 with a 373 slug. But on the bright side, Chris, quality of contact's gone down a little bit. Still pretty solid, though. Still above average quality of contact. Just not as good as it was last year. The impressive thing is he's dropped the K rate from 31 to 24.5%. Walk rate, which was right around league average last year, 8.4%, is now up to 11.2%. And even though he's still below average contact, he's increased his zone from 72 to 74.7%. Chase has dropped 3%, and overall contact went from 63 to 67.9%. So again, still got some work to do, but he has made improvements there. So I do think Morel is more of a buy low than anything. Just remember that it's going to be always streaky. He's going to be lower on the average spectrum and OBP spectrum, but still potential for 25, 30 home runs every year, right around 10 steals or so. So still a pretty fun player, but I don't know, pretty up and down profile too.
Yeah, I think it's certainly volatile. Yeah, right now hitting 199, it's not ideal. And it's actually surprising that he only has a 373 slug, just given the fact that he does hit the ball hard, that he barrels it up. 80th percentile barrel rate. It's one of the best bat speeds in the game. The sweets, what surprised me is his barrel rate's so good despite the sweet spot rate being terrible. Second percentile sweet spot percent. That's interesting. But he does. He swings and misses a lot. It's an interesting profile. If you can stomach the downs, and then when he's up, it's really good. There's a lot of power, speed, potential, and not that he runs all that much, but he's not a zero in stolen bases either, which is helpful. And when he gets on that hot streak, it's good stuff. Yeah, I'm curious to see how it works out. Like, how's he fitting in this lineup? That's what I'm most curious to see, is where does he slot in, and is he just going to go to third and block Caminero? Is he DH? Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think that's the question a lot of people have. Is he blocking Caminero? I don't think so. I think Morel's not a great defender. I think he DHs. Maybe he gets, you know, a start here and there at third, but I think Morel, most of his starts will be at DH. And like I said, if Caminero is not up by within 24 hours after the All-Star break, the deadline Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern time, I would be shocked. With Paredes out of town, Diaz might still be traded. They're going to have a lot of openings, so I think Caminero will be up soon. And I don't think Morel blocks him. So probably more often than not, he'll be starting at DH because it's not a lot of defensive value there. But I guess to wrap us up, that's a lot of fun trades already. I just checked one more time. Nothing else coming through. Tommy Edman drawing interest from a few teams, but no trades have gone through while we're recording. But maybe one happens later tonight before you hear this tomorrow on Monday. And we'll do it all again with all the other trades on Thursday. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. And we'll be back with you again in a couple of days. But until then, everyone take care.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to policygenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's policygenius.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.